Orihuela.
Could we start, if you don't mind, with a jurisdictional question that I have? Mr. Paez, this is an interesting case in some ways, or maybe I'm reading more into it than I should, but his proceedings are asylum-only proceedings, it says at the top of the page, and the derivative applicants are in removal proceedings. So is there any difference at all between those two for purposes of this case?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. Mr. Paez was placed in the asylum-only proceedings because of the type of visa that he entered in on, which was a C-1 Crewman's visa.
Right.
Under the statute, he was not allowed to be placed into direct removal proceedings. I also note that the board, when it initially issued its opinion October 28th of 2008, and that's that the Appendix 1, mm-hmm. it made that error in removal proceedings and then corrected itself with the later opinion in which it granted the motion to withdraw the voluntary departure.
Right.
We had filed the amended opinions as part of a motion to take judicial notice.
So now my next question is, if you're in something that's called asylum-only proceedings, is that taken to include withholding of removal and CAT protection, or are we supposed to be literal about the word asylum-only proceedings?
Your Honor, it has been interpreted before that a person who's in asylum-only proceedings may also apply for protection in the form of withholding and Convention Against Torture. Those are both mandatory forms of protection, not discretionary forms of protection. The immigration judge found jurisdiction over it. The board found jurisdiction over both forms of relief.
Okay, so if we were to decide, in keeping with our cases, that we have no jurisdiction over the board's decision that extraordinary circumstances excusing the failure to apply for asylum within a year didn't exist, and we've been actually rather consistent about our jurisdictional rulings on that, that one-year period doesn't apply for withholding or CAT, and so one would go on and simply conduct review from that perspective, obviously a different perspective from the asylum perspective. Is that where you think we are?
Under this court's jurisdictional holdings, yes, Your Honor, that is where this court has ruled. I did note in the opening brief that the Ninth Circuit has taken an opposite view, and I will be submitting a 28J letter to note that at this time there is a petition for writ of certiorari pending before the U.S. Supreme Court on the one-year deadline and whether a court has jurisdiction to review
it. Okay. But for the time being, I mean, I just wanted to make sure we all have the right perspective on the claims like the social group claim that you started out to make. So this will do him any good, if it can, only with respect to the more stringent requirements for withholding.
Yes, Your Honor, under the circuit's case law.
Right.
Regarding the one-year bar issue.
Okay.
The Board of Immigration Appeals, in its first decision in this matter, dated October 28th of 2008, found that Mr. Paez and his family had not established that there was a particular social group in line with this circuit's holding. And the case we rely on is the case of Orihuela. Mr. Paez had argued below to the immigration judge that the particular social group constituted family members of landowners who own the land in areas controlled by the FARC.
But that's quite a step away from Tapiero de Orihuela. His father was a potato farmer, as the board comments, and I'm not sure where the record is that there's some coherent social group that can be identified somehow that encompasses potato farmers that the government's unwilling to protect against FARC or what?
Your Honor, beyond just the issue of the distinction between the highly educated cattle owners, which was the issue presented in Orihuela, and in this particular case, in the administrative record, there is evidence regarding the size of the farm, and there was over 1,800 hectares of land owned in four parcels. So it was a substantial amount of land, not a small piece of land.
But is there a history of persecution, just like, you know, Jews would have been persecuted in certain cities because they were regarded as wealthy merchants, or Christians in various countries? I mean, is there some evidence in this record that this group was identified as a social group and also subject to persecution?
Not potato farmers per se, Your Honor. However, persons who own land in Colombia are targeted, as this court has recognized in its Orihuela opinion. The FARC does target landowners precisely for the point of wanting to take over more land, gain more territory, as well as obtain the population's submission to its policies and to its political agenda, as well as its warfare agenda.
But, counsel, the board found particularly that Paez had failed to show a clear probability of persecution. This is the paragraph at the bottom of 2 and the top of 3, because his father-in-law didn't have any trouble from the FARC before he died in 2006. None of his tenant farmers still living on the same land had any trouble. So if the theory is that this group is threatening people to take over their land, you've got these findings that this group has not tried to take over this land. And your brief doesn't say that finding is not supported by substantial evidence. Indeed, your brief doesn't mention that finding. It seems to me that gives you a significant amount of trouble.
Another viewpoint on this case, though, Your Honor, is looking back at what Mr.
I'm asking you to refer to this finding, right? Mm-hmm. If this finding is supported by substantial evidence, I don't see how you can prevail. Now, is there some argument that it's not supported by substantial evidence?
Based on that part of our argument, Your Honor, I would agree with you on it. The other issue that arises...
Wait. My question, I don't know how you can agree with a question. Are you agreeing with the proposition that if that finding is supported by substantial evidence, then your clients can't prevail?
Your Honor, it is the finding that...
Or are you agreeing that it is supported by substantial evidence?
The finding the board made that the father-in-law and the tenants did not have any issues living on the land is supported by substantial evidence. I do agree with that point. In Mr. Pius's situation...
The board then says, it's inferring from that, concluding from that, that the lead respondent has failed to show a clear probability that he will be persecuted in the future, right? Mm-hmm. Based on his membership in a particular social group. In other words, the board is assuming for this paragraph that landowners potentially threatened by the FARC are a particular social group, but it's finding that as a matter of fact, there isn't any persecution of the people who own this land. Well, that
is correct.
Is that
Your
dispositive?
Honor.
Is there some reason why that is not dispositive?
On that particular issue, yes, I would agree with the court that it is dispositive. However, there under the withholding standard, if we were to be back in the asylum standard, I would agree that he would have established a well-founded fear.
We're not under the asylum standard. The application is not timely. We lack jurisdiction to review the timeliness of the application. The only standard that we can apply here is the clear probability standard. And if you are now conceding that substantial evidence supports the board's adverse finding on the clear probability standard, this case is over. Is it not?
Your Honor, it would be, but we did raise a second issue regarding political opinion that I would like to address in my remaining time, if I may.
Sure.
The political opinion issue arises out of the fact that he was an active member of the Liberal Party between 1980 and 1990. There is record evidence regarding his membership, his campaigns on behalf of presidential candidates throughout the Uzme area.
That was a long time ago, though. What is the evidence that FARC, you know, has records going back all those years and waits for people to reappear and then it nails them?
Your Honor, that is a very good question. And as far as that goes, there was evidence through the country reports that discussed how FARC has infiltrated into all echelons of the government throughout the country, and that basically FARC has infiltrated every area of the country. Now, regarding would the FARC have records of his membership back from 1990, Usme is located in a red zone, which has been heavily battled by the FARC and the government authorities for the last two or three decades. So is Mr. Paez recognized based on his talks with farmers in Usme as being a Liberal Party supporter and having advocated on behalf of presidential candidates, including one who he personally knew and was assassinated? There is a long memory of people within that region. So would they remember him from the 1980s, his campaigning up through 90? Potentially, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. O'Connell.
May it please the Court, Joseph O'Connell, on behalf of the Attorney General, Eric Holder. Your Honors, I'm not sure, but I think Petitioner's counsel just conceded a dispositive factor in the case and that there's no evidence that Mr. Paez will be...
Conceded the withholding of removal point. She still has the asylum point. Under our holding, we lack jurisdiction, but she certainly preserved the right to ask the Supreme Court to disagree with us.
That's correct.
And I think she also... she conceded... I mean, it's certainly social group isn't the only theory under the statute. Maybe she conceded the social group theory, but in her last 2 minutes, she was trying to say she's also relying on political opinion, which is an independent ground under the statute.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But I think the evidence shows that there is, well, I think it's a lack of evidence that Mr. Paez will be persecuted or searched for on any ground whatsoever, be that particular social group, political opinion.
What does social visibility mean?
Well, the board has defined it. I understand that this court has taken issue with the social visibility requirement in Catania.
Well, I'd just like to know what it means.
Well, the board has defined it, and they say that I think it's self-defined. I think it's whether or not a group
is
visible.
Oh, you think it's self-evident?
It's self-evident, yes.
Oh, really?
But
I have no idea.
You have a bunch of judges saying to you in published opinions, we haven't a clue what this means. You then get asked, what does it mean? And the answer is, it's self-evident?
It's the extent to which... No, Your Honor. It's the extent to which...
It's self-evident, and we don't understand it. Then we're idiots. So on the assumption that it's possible to explain something to us, maybe the board would want to explain what it means.
Okay. I believe it's the extent to which the alleged group is visible or how it's perceived by society in question.
Do you have to wear a red armband, or I think
not necessarily. There's certain groups that are socially invisible, such as non-criminal informants, and by their activities, they're inherently invisible and not perceived by society.
What about women who've undergone female genital mutilation?
I don't know the particular facts. It would have to depend on what country they're from. I mean, the social visibility requirement may...
I'm saying that they're probably, at least in the world I live in, not particularly visible, and yet they're certainly an identifiable group who have suffered persecution.
It may very well be that they may be visible in whatever country that they're in.
No. What do you mean by visible? They're not visible in the sense that they look different from other people. Now, of course, some do. Like Sikhs, they wear a turban. You look at them, you know that's a Sikh.
Okay.
But as in Judge Wood's example, a woman who has undergone, FMG or who fears it or something like that, or they don't wear badges that identify them as that. So how does this word visible get in here?
Well, the particular social group is defined on a case-by-case basis. So in certain circumstances...
I'm asking you, what is social visibility? We agreed, they had a perfectly good test. Was it a group? You belong to a group. Is it something where you could just leave, easily or something like that? You can't, you're stuck, and so on. And that's our various cases, and that's fine. But then the board adds the social visibility. We're trying to figure out, some of their opinions make it seem as if they actually mean visible in a kind of literal sense, that these people can be recognized by other people and you know, subjected to persecution. So if they're good at concealment, they have no claim. And so we're struggling to find out whether there's some coherent concept badly articulated with this word visibility, but maybe making some sense.
The best way I can define it is if the group is perceived by society and how it's perceived by society. I think that is indicative.
Okay, this is the group, the perception of the group or the opinion of
correct.
The group.
Correct.
That's quite different from the whether a member of the group is recognizable.
Right. As a group member.
Right.
So you might say that Sikhs are visible because they generally wear turbans.
Correct.
And it wouldn't matter if a particular person was trying to evade prosecution by taking off his turban.
I'm sorry.
I want to ask you what you think about kirpans.
I'm sorry.
It's a ceremonial knife every Sikh wears.
Right.
But he wears it under his clothing rather than on top.
Okay. I understand the social visibility group is not dispositive in every case, such as FGM.
No. You're not answering
okay.
the question.
The question
is what it means, not whether it's dispositive in every case. Judge Eastbrook has given you a good example.
Okay.
So why don't you tell us what you think, how you think that Sikh who's not wearing his turban is to be...
Again, if the Sikh is not wearing his turban, then he's not socially visible in society.
Yeah, but
no,
then,
he's not perceived by the
group. In response to Judge Posner, you said that this visibility criterion was applied to the nature of the group, and that's why I asked about Sikhs, because Sikhs generally wear turbans.
Correct.
But a particular Sikh may seek to hide, and it sounds like you're saying that anybody who tries to hide his group membership has removed himself from the group, and by the very act of trying to hide in order to avoid persecution, now becomes ineligible for asylum, even though the group is persecuted and it's a meaningful social group. And that sounds like a very strange thing to say.
If, given your example, the hypothetical with the Sikh who tries to remove his turban, if he's not going to be persecuted in the future and he voluntarily decides to remove himself from social visibility...
No, that's not the hypothetical.
He's not quitting as a Sikh. It just, he
right, he's quitting the social visibility, so he... Hypothetically, he won't be persecuted because of it.
He's living in a society that persecutes Sikhs.
One might ask... Were Christians persecuted during Nero's term as emperor of Rome? Some Christians continued depicting themselves in public as Christians, and others went underground in order to avoid the persecution.
Okay.
But I think you would say that Christians were a social group, right? Christianity was a social group.
Correct.
Or a religion, even though some people were quite successful in hiding. But you certainly wouldn't say Christianity was not a religion or a social group, nor would you say it wasn't persecuted just because some people, by going underground and pretending to worship Zeus,
okay.
might evade detection. That's the problem we're having. The social visibility criterion doesn't seem to help us resolve questions like that.
Your Honors, I understand perfectly that this court has a serious issue with the social visibility requirement. My 28J Gatimi, I understand.
Don't know but in that case, we don't know whether we have an issue with it because we don't know what it means.
I can only wait for further guidance from the board.
You know what it means?
Right.
The board doesn't explain.
Well, look, as you said, you represent Attorney General Holder. Attorney General Holder has been very active in issuing opinions, taking over some of the board's cases and issuing opinions. Perhaps
right.
you could suggest to the Attorney General that this area needs some attention.
I will absolutely suggest to my supervisor that the area needs attention. I don't know if it'll get to the Attorney General per se. In any event, I understand that this court has issues with the social visibility requirement, but you can put that to the side for this case, because in this case, the dispositive thing is the lack of evidence that Mr. Paez will be persecuted, sought after for any reason whatsoever. His family still lives there. They haven't been contacted. The people who own the land haven't been contacted. He hasn't been there for 20 years. He's apolitical now. He's not a member of the Liberal Party. And there's simply no reason to believe that the FARC will contact this man. And his land in Uzme, his in-laws' land in Uzme, is a suburb of Bogota. It's right outside Bogota. It's 10 miles south of Bogota. And in any event...
And why is that significant?
Because I think Petitioner's Counsel phrased it that the in-laws' land is in an area controlled by FARC, is a way which was phrased in the brief, but that's simply not true.
If a place is a suburb of a big city, doesn't mean that it's not controlled by a criminal gang. I believe Al Capone and his friends controlled the town of Cicero, Illinois, even though it's pretty much right next to Chicago.
That's correct, but there's no evidence in the
record. Run suburbs. It's been done.
But there's no evidence in the record that the FARC has land in suburbs of Bogota. That's the main issue here. But in any event, the evidence here is insufficient to overturn the agency's decision in this case. It's a significant burden of proof withholding. It's greater than asylum, and it's compounded by the standard review in this case. And unless Your Honors have any further questions. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until next week.